Pub and Brew House at 403 East Hastings at 8 for locally made beer, pool, music, and an epic night. Cover is $6 at the door and the show is 19+. Check out CITR on Facebook or on Twitter at CITR Shindig for all the details.
Hey, CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory here in Vancouver.
Hey there. This ad caught your attention. It also caught the attention of the coolest people from Squamish to Bellingham, music fans, students, and members of various cultural communities. If you want your ad to do the same, advertise with CITR and Discorder. If you've got a rad new ad or just something you want to share, whether in print, on air, or online, promote your wares, services, or events with us. Contact us at advertising@citr.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit citr.ca for rates, information, and packages. This is the end of our ad, and if you're still here, we must be doing something right.
Tune in every other Sunday from 3 to 4 p.m. for Blood on the Saddle with your host, Dan N., for real, authentic country.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with me today. And we are joined today by Tobin Blake. He is the author of The Healing of Jordan Young, a 21st Century Spiritual Guide to Health and Healing. And Tobin Blake is the author of The Power of Stillness and Everyday Meditation. He's a longtime student of meditation, healing, and the mind-body connection, which we love here on Synchronicity. He holds workshops on meditation and spiritual awakening, and he lives in Bend, Oregon. And if you're interested in getting in touch with him, you can go to his website, TobinBlake.com. That's TobinBlake.com. Welcome to the show, Tobin.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being with us today. So Jordan Young is a young man who was dating your daughter.
That is correct. You know, so he was, they were high school sweethearts. And by the time he was diagnosed with a very serious aggressive form of lymphoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a form of cancer, he had already become a part of our family and we all cared about him very deeply. So when he got sick, it was a personal thing for me.
So what, I mean, this young man, this boy, he was just, had just turned 18 before his diagnosis. What's going on through your mind? What's that like for you and your family?
Well, for me personally, you know, honestly, I had been studying mind-body healing for many years. I'd already, by this point, written two books on meditation, The Power of Stillness and Everyday Meditation. And in fact, Everyday Meditation had just been released right about the same time he was diagnosed. So for me, I immediately went into positive thinking mode. And this is something I had been, you know, that had been sort of drilled into me over the years. So I began just holding positive intentions for him. Now, as his disease progressed, he received all kinds of treatments. First of all, chemotherapy, later on smart therapy or smart chemo, it's sometimes called, basically a targeted form of chemo. And one after another, the bottom line is these treatments failed him. So at some point I had to switch from just being sort of passively engaged in this process to being a little bit more directly involved. And that's when I began teaching Jordan meditation and visualization and things of these nature and just providing, you know, quiet presence with him, you know, during a lot of this. And being of general emotional support, one of the most important things we can do for a person who's sick.
So can you explain what you mean by quiet presence?
Yeah, well, I mean engaging in the state of presence. So the state of presence, for those who are unfamiliar with it, is really something that is with us all the time. But unfortunately, because we are so engaged with our thinking minds, we lose touch with that. And in fact, most people live most of their lives in a state of thinking, continuous thinking, and most importantly, you're engaged with that thinking process. So this involves a lot of projection into the future, a lot of thinking about the future, hopes and dreams about the future, fears about the future, or in contrast, we might dwell on the past, you know, the good times and the bad times, whatever. The problem with this is it removes us from what is right now, from a present experience of the moment as it is. So a lot of what I did was just simply ground myself in the present to free myself from the stream of thinking and just be with them then in that state. And what healers do, I think, is they provide a rootedness in presence that actually reaches down to the place where we're all connected with each other. So in this way, we can sense our unity with another person. And in so doing, we can provide some of our energy mixed and mingled into their energy and help them through whatever they happen to be dealing with. In this case, a very serious disease.
So Tobin, I can imagine for a young man, especially in this generation, this computer age, I know for myself, not even having grown up from young childhood with computers, it is so hard to disconnect and be present. Even though I've been hosting this show for 7 or 8 years, I've got all this practice. So what was the attitude and response of this young man when you said, we're going to meditate and be present?
Yeah, well, I approached it very gingerly. At first, I thought there's no way, you know, he's going to be interested in this kind of stuff. He's 18 years old. 18-year-old kids don't meditate. That was my presumption. Yeah, and that was one of my own learning moments when I realized, you know, actually, he took right to it. He was interested in it, and he really got into it. And was a natural. So that was quite surprising. And in fact, as far as I know, the last I heard, he was still into meditation periodically. Eventually, he took a full 8-week course from me. So that's how interested he was in it. Very surprising. And it just goes to show you don't make judgments just based on a person's age. You really don't know where they're at.
That's lovely. Now, you mention in the book the connection between our thoughts and what goes on in our head and what happens in our body. And I'm sure that most of the people watching or listening to this interview are already on board with that. But just in case people are new to this idea, can you walk us through what you mean by that?
Sure. I mean, it's no surprise that the mind and the body are connected. And we can see this on really simple levels. We know when we get stressed out, our body reacts to that. So there is a direct connection there. And if you actually look at a lot of the scientific evidence right now, it may even go further than that. For instance, in the book, I quote a scientist named Dr. Candace Pert. She was a pharmacologist, and she was a hardcore scientist. She passed away some years ago, but Dr. Pert did a tremendous amount of research into the connection between body and mind. And she had published something like 250 scientific papers in journals, medical journals, and scientific journals, and written a number of books about these processes. In one of her books, Molecules of Emotion, she really summed up her research on this by stating quite an amazing statement, I think, that the mind and the body are not only connected. She had begun to see that based on all of her research, the body was the actual physical extension of the mind in space and time. So therefore, whatever was extending into the body and manifesting into the body must have some roots in the psyche or the emotional body of the patient. So what that means for us in practical terms is if we get sick, physically ill, there must be some root to that illness within us, within our mental and emotional states. So if we can track down what that is and root it out and change that, then the physical part of the disease will repair itself somehow, some way. it may be a spontaneous healing. But even if it's not, because not everybody's open to spontaneous healings, the right medication will be found. The right healer will show up in the patient's life at just the right moment. They'll find themselves in the right place at the right time, or even a medication perhaps that hadn't worked before will begin working. But some way, somehow, it has to be, if you remove the root of a disease, the disease must resolve itself.
Tobin, that brings up a study I saw within the last few months about how trauma, emotional trauma, in this study, it was survivors of the Holocaust, and how that changed, how that trauma was transmitted through their DNA down through the generations. So, I mean, I don't know if you've heard of that study or not, but it seems like the thoughts and the experiences and memories of your great-grandfather or great-grandmother is still affecting your body and probably your mind and how your thoughts work even now. So what do we do about that?
Intelligence is vast. You know, we're all interconnected. We have a mental psyche that seems to be personal, but if we just dip a little bit deeper into our self, the inner self, we discover that expands into what Carl Jung, the great psychologist, a student of Freud, called the collective unconscious of humanity. So we have not only the Holocaust survivors' offspring experience some of their residual suffering, but we also have the suffering of all of humanity sort of programmed into us to a certain degree. But that really becomes a moot point when we become present and we learn how to go into our own one self, you know, our true self, what I call our core self. As we reconnect with that, we sort of surpass all of that stuff, human ego, our own human ego, our collective ego, which includes all the suffering of not only our ancestors, but all of humanity. So therein lies the key, learning to go beyond it into the present moment, which takes you into your highest self, where there is none of that. There is no pain. There is no suffering. And where you come in contact with your original self as you were originally born, an extension of your source.
As you're talking about the suffering of all of humanity, I feel this like sadness welling up in my heart, and I just wonder how, as someone who's been teaching meditation for so long, and I would say go as far to call you an expert on the subject, how often do you find yourself in that connected state versus that suffering or concern about the world?
Well, it's interesting. I just had a conversation about enlightenment, quote unquote, recently. And enlightenment, people often think of as just one moment. You know, you sit down beneath the Bodhi tree and you have this revelation experience, and then you're completely liberated and free. But I think in the vast majority of cases, enlightenment occurs in stages. So you have these flashes of light, these moments where you go beyond time, you go beyond ego, you go beyond it all, and then you come back into an ego state, and you may become absorbed in it for some time. And certainly, you know, I've gone back and forth so many times between ego state and my true state in reality. And it continues, you know, it continues. You get sucked into the drama occasionally. And then you remember, oh, wait, I'm not all this. This is unimportant. This is a slideshow. Look around your life and begin to look at it that way. Everything you experience in this world is just a show, just like a movie. And as such, it's really a fiction. And you'll begin to understand that when you go deeper into your true self and experience your true self. And then you begin to realize, oh, okay, this is the truth. And all that other stuff that's changing and whirling past me is not the truth. So I still go back and forth, but more and more I find myself engaged in that state. It's actually easier to be engaged in that state because it doesn't involve anything. It involves no doing nothing. In fact, it requires no energy, no effort, just relaxing and letting go and letting life take the driver's seat for a while, and just you become passenger and you just enjoy the scenery and interact as seem natural with the world and don't take any of it too seriously.
To me, that's like, it is work to keep bringing myself back. I mean, I guess after you've practiced it enough, right, it becomes more of a habit. But just yesterday, I was literally crying about how overwhelmed I am about basically just chasing my own tail, because I'm sure now that you're promoting your book, that which, by the way, is The Healing of Jordan Young, you're noticing how with social media and everything, how if you choose to, there is a never-ending to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
How are you dealing with that?
You know, it's a challenge at times. There are times when I'm busier than other times. And you just do your best with that to manage things and juggle things. But honestly, a lot of what we get sucked into is just unnecessary distractions. That conversation that I had mentioned actually was on the tail of the speech that I had given that involved discussing in part Buddha's moment of enlightenment. And when Buddha sat down beneath the now famous Bodhi tree, and he had determined that he was going to achieve enlightenment, he was going to achieve his goal, and he wasn't going to get up until he had done so, Mara, which could be likened to the devil, you know, Satan, in Christian terms, or to ego in contemporary spiritual terms, rose up before him and attempted to tempt him. And the first thing Mara did to dissuade him from his goal was to tempt him with power, worldly riches, you know, dreams of happiness, beautiful women, these sorts of things. And Siddhartha was not at all interested in any of this. And so the next thing that happened was Siddhartha was attacked by Mara, who had summoned the demons of hell, essentially. And they lined up by the thousands into the distance, and they raised their demon bows and they shot their demon arrows. And thousands of arrows flew at Siddhartha as he sat in meditation, and he didn't move. He didn't budge. And these arrows, as they began to rain down upon him, they transformed themselves into flower petals and just gently floated down all around him. And then finally Mara rose up and looked just like Siddhartha at this moment and said, you know what? I am your home. If I die, you die. And it was at that moment that Siddhartha, young Prince Siddhartha, uttered some of the most powerful words ever spoken by a human being. And what he said was, architect, you will not build your home here again. The earth is my witness. You are pure illusion. And then he touched the earth with his right hand. And in that moment, Mara, without a sound, dissolved before him. And the Buddha, or Siddhartha, Prince Siddhartha, became the Buddha, the awakened one, from thereafter. Well, guess what? All of those things that Siddhartha went through, the attack, the temptation to regard happiness in simple worldly terms, and so on and so forth, the belief that the ego is our home, for instance, all of those things, we deal with those every day. Collect grievances to feel attacked or to attack others, those, or to regard our happiness in terms of some fanciful idea that in the future, if only these situations were resolved, or if only we had more money, et cetera, then we could be happy and at peace with the moment. And those moments never come. These are the assaults of Mara. This is the journey into awakening. into enlightenment and into simple peace of mind, if you prefer to just regard it that way. In truth, they all are truly the same. So we deal with this daily ourselves. And our goal then is to choose peace with every step. That's it. That is the journey.
Tovin, we're talking about Siddhartha and the Buddha, which was many, many years ago. And it reminded me of a story from the Bible where, I can't remember the guy, but there was some point where he had to have faith in losing his son. His son was going to be sacrificed or something. And he had to trust God that all would be taken care of. And so these teachings have been around for thousands of years. Why do you think, with all of the knowledge that we have and all of this history of being able to be present, we're still struggling with these same issues that humanity has been struggling with since the dawn of time?
Yeah. Well, many people believe that we are currently in the midst of a great awakening, and that ultimately will culminate with a fully awakened society. You know, it could be some ways off. Who knows? I don't guess. But we're each in charge of our own awakening. And the truth is, we have a tremendous amount of resistance to it. When we're born into this world, we're born into a world where we appear to be separate from the universe and separated from everyone around us and the world around us and from God. Well, when that happens, if you look at what happens to the psychology, you become at odds with the universe. You now live in a universe where there may not be abundance, where it's a dog eat dog situation, and you have to attack others in order simply to survive, or this is what it appears to be in any case. And so what happens is we end up with this residual layer of guilt within us, where we feel intensely guilty. We almost feel like we've attacked the universe by coming into a separated state. And it's not true. Actually, we couldn't be truly separated from the universe. So therein lies the folly to this whole thing. But what happens is we begin to engage in ego, and we begin to think of ourselves as a separate being. And we build upon that foundation, and we become personalities, and we become very engaged with our bodies and our thoughts and who we are in this world and our need to succeed and feelings of victimization and feelings of guilt for the mistakes we make over time. And all these things culminates in this really top heavy artificial self, which is what the ego is. That's all it is. It's just an artificial self. And when we have invested so much in this, to go back into unity and experience what we really are, experience our unity with everybody and with all of life and with God, it almost feels like, to the ego, a loss. You know, it's just as Mara said to Buddha. He said, I am your home. If I die, you die with me. It wasn't true, but that's a pretty significant threat. But what Buddha found was, by dissolving his sense of ego, he actually expanded and gained in power. And that's what we all have to remember. Alone, this tiny little self, we're just a floating speck of dust, basically, in space. Truly, that's all we are as egos and bodies, destined not to survive. But in truth, we are eternal beings with limited power, limitless power, and limitless knowledge. So by going back into that state, by releasing fear, by learning to walk the path of gentleness and forgiveness, we release all our sense of guilt, and we are able to reemerge into that self. So a lot of people, what they think is, I don't have the concentration for this. I don't have, you know, I can't stay focused on this. It keeps slipping away from me. But in truth, it really is our own sense of fear that holds us back most. If we're able to let go of that, being present becomes natural.
Wow, there's so much good stuff in there. It's made me think of so many questions. Right now, we are speaking with Tobin Blake. He is the author of The Healing of Jordan Young, a 21st Century Spiritual Guide to How. And animals, they just go back to baseline. Instinct that we have, like people are wanting to harm other people to keep what they think is important, like we cling to things. And that made me think of animals, how an animal can go out and kill and eat something, and yet then the animal comes back to see appears to come back to its center and is just calm, doesn't seem to feel guilty or right. worried about where its next meal is going to come from. So I don't necessarily think that it is that reptilian survival brain that necessarily causes that, because in animals, they just go back to baseline after that. So what do you think it is in humans that causes us to have so much suffering?
Well, you know, we become very attached to our consciousness as egos. And we are self-aware creatures. Some people may argue we're the only self-aware creatures. I don't think that's entirely true. I think there are levels of awareness, self-awareness. I won't get into the whole animal, hierarchy of animals in terms of awareness. But when we become self-aware, we develop the ability to think. And thinking can be a great tool. It allows us, it has allowed us to build, you know, externally in ways that animals are not able to do. It has allowed us to explore various forms of reason in a way that most animals are simply not capable of. But if we become absorbed in our thinking minds and everything we believe that we are, we become very, very invested in this. And because ego and the human body is inherently a part of time and space, and therefore it's temporary, it's inherently threatened, easily threatened. And this is really the basis for fear. The only way through this is to go back into your true self, reconnect with that, realize what you really are, and then you won't feel so threatened, you know, so easily. You'll realize that everything that's happening in this world is just happening on the surface. If you consider the ocean, for instance, you realize that all the tumultuous activity that occurs on the surface of the ocean is not, does not affect the depths of the ocean, which is by far the vast majority of what makes up our seas. There's no comparison. So we only see as human beings, as bodies, as personalities, as egos, what's going on the surface of life. We don't see in our ordinary day-to-day existence what goes on below the surface of what we are. And this is why I urge everybody to meditate regularly. You know, and regularly doesn't mean a long time, but spend at least a few minutes in the morning and a few minutes at night before bed, just checking in with that space. And gradually that space will expand and you'll begin to feel such attraction to it that you'll want to meditate more and more. And even when you're not meditating specifically, you'll find that your mind is in that space and you'll be walking around dealing with your daily activities and you'll find yourself suddenly quite present and enjoying it, and you'll never want it to end. So begin small and explore that inner space that I'm discussing. And as you do, and as that deepens, your sense of fear will lessen. You'll realize I am an eternal being. I'm not this little tiny speck of space dust, you know, destined to live a tiny little life that ends in death and pain. That's just not what you are. So explore those inner spaces, people. Absolutely, go for it. That's freedom.
Do you have any guided meditations that you sell on your website? Because as you're talking about the ocean, I'm just immediately feeling so much more calm. And you know, my boyfriend was like running out the door before we started and things were a little bit frantic. So I could totally feel the difference of like, oh,
yeah. I don't have any currently. And that's something that's been on my to-do list. But as you pointed out, there are so many things to get done and it hasn't happened yet, but it will soon. So stay tuned. And there's actually on the on my homepage, my welcome page, there is a little box people can sign up for my emails. And when I do get that up and running, I definitely will send out an email blast and let people know it's there.
Okay, so that is TobinBlake.com, and Tobin is spelled T-O-B-I-N. And we are speaking with the author right now, The Healing of Jordan Young, a 21st Century Spiritual Guide to Health and Healing. If you're watching this on YouTube, I will post a link in the description below to Tobin's website. Or if you're listening on the radio, then you'll have to look it up, TobinBlake.com. So one of the things that I've been working towards through this show is just slowing things down, because in radio there's not supposed to be any silence.
Yeah.
But without taking that moment, I'm constantly having to think of what I'm going to ask you next.
Right.
As you're speaking. So it's finding that balance between really being present. And I think it's okay to take a moment, even if that means a bit of silence. What do you think?
Absolutely. I say this sometimes in my talks. I let people know it's kind of sounds like a contradiction. Okay. I've worked with words for many, many years. I started writing right around the year 1998 or so. And I've done a lot of little magazine articles and short stories. So I write fiction and poetry and three nonfiction books now and one unpublished novel. It won't stay unpublished forever, though. So look out, world. So I do. I'm a writer, you know, besides being a meditation teacher and a spiritual teacher. So, and I also do talks and I do shows like this. So I use words a lot. But recently I've started telling people, my audiences, it's not the words that matter. I used to be really caught up in words and wanting to get my words just right and how to say things just right and explain this and that just right. And then at some point I realized that words are just symbols. In fact, if you believe teachings such as A Course in Miracles, they are symbols of symbols, meaning the world itself is a symbol. Everything in the world is a symbol. And our words then symbolize those symbols. So they are thus, as the Course says, twice removed from reality. So they are not the truth. So everything I'm saying here is not true. that's the cold, hard truth of it. It's not true. But, you know, all I can do is point to truths and reflect the truth in a way that helps to redirect people to that which is true. Their presence, their self, their experience of life, even in the illusion of the world, we have that with us and experience. We can experience that directly. So what I say now to a lot of my audiences is if I appear to stop, and if I appear to be just standing here, looking foolish, listen to the silence between the words that I am speaking. That is what all of my words are designed to direct you towards. So get comfortable with those spaces. Take them in. Breathe. That is where self-realization is discovered.
Oh, that's so good. why do you think it is that people are so uncomfortable with just like a 2-second pause?
Because the ego dissolves in those moments. It happens rapidly. It happens instantaneously. And while it feels so good, if you aren't comfortable with allowing your ego to dissolve, and if you still feel guilty and afraid of what you are, you will resist those moments. And so you'll feel the need to talk as fast as you can and get everything right and fill every space up. And you'll have no moments to appreciate that. So we need to begin doing the opposite. And that's really what why I teach meditation. That's the intentional approach of creating those spaces. But we can create them at any time. And you certainly can do so in your shows. But I admit, it is a little bit more challenging because, as you said, on radio, silence is dead air, and it's a quote unquote no-no, and you know, people will tune in and they'll say, what's all this silence? This radio station's broken. Yeah. And then they'll move on. So it's a conundrum, but you can just do your best with it.
Well, I find yesterday I had an interview, my boyfriend and I did an interview just like this one on Google Hangouts on air with a psychologist who we just adore and has been on many times. And I was so focused on bringing it back to the book and reeling them in from talking about comedy and board games and stuff that I missed opportunities for what would have been such a deep and profound and helpful conversation for listeners and viewers. And so as I was looking back, I was judging myself because I missed these opportunities. I wasn't really listening to what he had to say. I was just worried about keeping the time and all of that. And
you're juggling, and you know, it's a challenge, and you have to pay attention to time on your side of things, and you have to provide some structure to your interviews, certainly. But the most important thing you certainly can do is just to be present yourself, regardless of what's going on, and just let it go, you know, let it go. I know Oprah Winfrey said something that was interesting, and I forget where I heard this, but it was fascinating. Oh, I think it was in a interview she did with Eckhart Tolle. But she had said that for most of her early career, and she was in news, like a local news, I believe it was at first, she was trying so hard just to fit into that newscaster role. And it wasn't until she made a mistake, and I don't remember what the mistake was, but she made some mistake, and then she laughed at herself on air. And she said that that was the moment for her that changed everything, because that was the first moment on air where she was really herself. And that is, I think, that the highest thing we can aspire to do, regardless of what we're doing, is just to be ourselves, just to be relaxed and be who we are and be okay with making mistakes and be okay with things not being perfect. And once we relax and find that groove, everything flows naturally for us.
So Tobin, I'm wondering if there's something, because there is, especially when you're on camera or you're doing an interview, you want to do a good job. And now that you are doing all of this promotion for your book, what do you do for yourself to get present and calm and grounded before an interview like this?
Well, my routine is really simple, and my routine changes very little. You know, obviously sometimes I'm doing other things. I'm having to do things outside of my regular routine, but even so, because I'm so grounded in my practices, it doesn't feel like anything's really changing. So my routines are simple. I get up in the morning and I meditate for as long as I feel comfortable. It's usually 20 or 30 minutes. And then I take care of whatever business is going on. And before an interview, I simply close my eyes and I check in with that space, which I've grounded myself in the morning. And I may allow thoughts regarding what I might want to say. You know, that might change. I'm totally open to things changing. But I allow thoughts to come naturally to me about what's most important about the message that I have, for that day, for that audience, to just kind of percolate and come to a simmer. And basically, I give it all over to spirit at that point, and I let go, and I don't even bother trying. And that's how I prepare.
Thank you for that. That's very helpful. Well, again, we are speaking with Tobin Blake. He is the author of The Healing of Jordan Young. And let's talk a little bit about the book. Bring it back to the book. I love the beautiful cherry blossoms on the cover. So pretty. So who is this book for? Who's the intended audience?
This book is for everybody, anybody and everybody, because healing is really about awakening. So it's about all of us. We all have ultimately the destination to awaken to our true selves. And really, that's what the book is about. It takes the form of a young man who developed lymphoma, and he reached the stage where the Western medicine said, we can't help you. We don't know what to do anymore for you. And where it truly did appear that he was going to die quite rapidly as the disease invaded his lungs and he began suffocating, invaded his liver. It was fully out of control and all of his treatments had failed. And incredibly, he survived. And well, I can't get into all the details about how all this happened, because it was quite an extraordinary, twisty, turny journey that involved all these what I call coincidences, synchronicities. So, you know, that makes sense for your show, right? That came into play that we could have never predicted. But as it turned out, Jordan ended up in just the right place at just the right time, surrounded by just the right people. And things like a domino just fell into place. And from my perspective, it truly felt like being in a movie. I mean, it was just things happened that we could have never have predicted. It was like there was some master movie screenwriter back there writing these plot twists. So that was what happened, you know, externally in the journey. But the book is also about healing on all levels. So we're talking about physical healing. We're talking about staying healthy as well. So these are principles, and the book includes some of these. I'll get to that in just a sec here, about staying healthy, and as well as being mentally healthy, emotionally healthy, helping to heal our relationships. Healing is all one thing. So the principles that come into play here to help us stay physically healthy or to heal when we're sick with something specific also apply to every dimension of our lives. And ultimately, they come back into a system that helps us to awaken, to challenge the things in our lives that are holding us back from awakening, to challenge the things in our lives that are on an emotional level, that are contributing to disease and illness, and to really transform those things. So that really is what the book is about. And when I got to the point where Jordan was, you know, not expected to survive, I had to pause at that moment and release myself and everything I thought I could do to help Jordan, and all of my expectations. I had to just step back and let it all go and say, okay, God, basically, you know, okay, God, I give up. I surrender. I don't know what to do here. How can I be of help to this young man in need? And it was not that long after that moment, and just critical, you know, heartbreaking, terrifying moment, that these words, these profound words, started coming to me. And those words eventually formed into 10 principles of healing. And I really felt like these words weren't coming through me. I mean, from me, they were coming through me. So people say, why did you write this book, Tobin? I didn't write this book. I don't know what wrote this book, but in some ways the book wrote me, or the book rewrote me. You could even say it that way. You know, it changed my life. But those principles began with these most profound words, and they came to me at just a moment when all hope seemed to be totally lost, when Jordan had been flown to OHSU hospital suffocating on tumors, and everything was just there was no clear path ahead. And these words said just the most profound things to me. And those words were three sentences. They said, "With love, all things can be healed. With love, hope is always justified. And with love, nothing is impossible, no matter what the doctors or anybody else tells you to the contrary." And that really is where this book was born, with those words.
So right now we are speaking with Tobin Blake. He is the author of The Healing of Jordan Young, a 21st Century Spiritual Guide to Health and Healing. And I believe you were going to share some of those 10 principles with us.
Yeah, well, I'll start with three of pivotal ones. I mean, the basis of the book are that our thoughts, of course, have an effect on us. And loving thoughts, what I just call love thoughts generically, any thoughts that are positive in nature and connect us to others are love-based thoughts. Love-based thoughts in general help us to heal. Whereas fear thoughts, thoughts of, you know, anger, guilt, you know, all the destructive thoughts in general are fear-based thoughts, and those feed disease. So part of the first parts of the book are helping people to retrain and reprogram their thinking systems to generate more healing thoughts and reduce the number of negative thinking patterns that are present. But beyond that, some of the most important principles are actually later in the book. I called them special principles of healing. And they're so important that they could be thought of as laws of healing. In fact, originally I called them laws of healing. And I mentioned this in the book. But these special principles of healing are something that if we want to heal at the deepest level, meaning we're not just treating the physical part of the disease, we're treating the root of the disease in our psyche and in our emotional bodies. We're really tracking down the heart of the disease and rooting it out. We need to come into alignment, if you would, with these three primary principles. And I'd like to share those. And I encourage people to take these in, take them with you. You know, the book's copyrighted, but these principles are for everybody. So even if you don't buy the book, take these in and share them with your loved ones and share them with anybody you know who's struggling, and certainly make them a part of your life. So the first special principle of healing, and these are all really simple, but that's their beauty, is that in order to heal, the patient must believe healing is possible. You've got to believe that you have a chance here. And if you don't believe that you have a chance, then what you're doing is you're fighting against your own belief system. You're fighting against your mind, which is the most powerful thing in your universe. You are a little universe. I'm a little universe. We all have our little universes here. And your mind is the center of that universe. And your beliefs are extraordinarily powerful. They shape your entire experience of life. So if you believe you can't heal, you have to find a way to challenge that belief, draw that belief up into your consciousness and challenge it, however it comes about. And that goes for diseases that we believe we cannot heal because they're chronic, and diseases that we may believe are terminal. It's equally applicable to both situations. And, you know, I want to just insert this here. We know that the human body doesn't last forever. Okay, I accept that. But to the extent that we are not at the point where we are ready to leave this world, we'll all reach that point. But if we're not there yet, all things can be healed. So keep that in mind. If you're at the point where your current incarnation on this earth, what I call earth school, is done, nothing's going to be of assistance. Nothing's going to help. But in the vast majority of cases, of course, that's not where we're at. So first of all, challenge any beliefs to the contrary of whether or not you can be healed.
I just have a question about that. I'm like, raise my hand. So, it is Earth School, so I got to raise my hand.
Yeah, good point.
If you are truly done here on this planet, I imagine that there wouldn't be fear about leaving. So that's my guess. I want to check in with what you think.
Good point. People who have advanced to the point where they're familiar with what they are beyond their body certainly can leave this earth in peace. But, you know, as we know, most people do struggle and they are afraid. In the book, I share this great little story called The Little Swell. And I don't know if you remember it or not, but it's a lovely little story that talks about a swell who is a family of swells, like ocean swells, and they're traveling across the sea. And up ahead in the distance, they see another group of swells. And these waves, they're crashing into a shoreline, into an island, and they're exploding in white water, and then they're dissolving into nothingness, it appears. So this one little swell looks ahead at all this activity going on and becomes terrified. And he says, he starts screaming. And then one of the older swells says, "What's going on? Why are you afraid? Why are you screaming?" And the little swells, "Well, look ahead, look. We're all gonna be smashed against these rocks and killed." And then the older swell just starts laughing. He says, "I think, my friend, that you've mistaken yourself for just a wave, for just a swell. But in reality, you are the sea. You are it." And we know this, of course, as human beings looking at ocean swells, or the waves aren't destroyed. They're just ocean moving across the surface of the ocean, energy. But we're the same as that. So if we're not comfortable, if we don't have that realization in our minds that we are the ocean, of course, we're going to think of ourselves as just temporary little bubbles or waves on top of the ocean that are going to be destroyed. So it can happen either way. Many people who it's time for them to leave the earth, their current incarnation, are not at peace. And I encourage everybody out there to begin exploring what you truly are, so you will be at peace when it's time for you to leave. And I also should point out here that every death is a birth somewhere else. When people tell me that, "Oh, you know, when I die, I'm going to go to heaven," I say, "Well, actually, when you died, you came to earth. Earth is the land of death. That's why death seems to be all around us while we're here. In quote unquote heaven, nirvana, whatever you want to call it, there is only continuous life. So, you know, every death is a birth somewhere else." And I could go on and on talking about this, but I guess we should get through the other two principles that I really want to share. So, special principle of healing number two is, in order to heal, the patient must want to heal at all levels. That means there's nothing inside that they're hiding, or that is just in unconsciousness that they're using sickness for. They're not getting anything out of it, you know? So I'll give you a quick example here. When I was young, and I know a lot of people had this experience, I remember being sick once, and my mom came in and she gave me all this attention, and I got ice cream, and I was able to stay home, and I watched cartoons all day, and I was showered with all this kind of attention. Now, for me, it didn't really matter because I felt loved outside of that experience. But what happens if you don't? What happens is we may develop long-term patterns where we use sickness just to get attention. And we may not even know we're doing it. In most cases, you probably don't. Or, you know, there are a variety of things, and I cover these in the book as well. There are a variety of things, but what we need to do is really get down and dirty and dig within our consciousness and see if we're using sickness for any particular purpose. We need to raise that into our awareness and challenge it and realize that whatever we're getting from that is not what we would have. It's not worth it, in other words, and let it dissipate. And the third law here that I'd like to share is, in order to heal, the patient must feel he or she deserves to heal. And this cuts straight to the root of the cause of so much of our distress. And that cause is, I've already mentioned it, guilt. guilt is the most destructive of all emotions that we deal with. It is the anger turned around and driven in and used against ourselves. So it may be guilt that's attached to something we've done in the past and we haven't forgiven ourselves for, or it may just be residual guilt that seems to be a part of our ego structure. In either case, we once again need to dig into our consciousness and our subconsciousness and see if there's any sense of guilt lingering there. And if we do find that, we need to challenge it and forgive ourselves for whatever it is that we happen to think maybe we're not worth healing for. So we need to let go of all that stuff. And it's quite a process, but that is the true work of healing, of true healing, of getting through it, of pulling out the roots and letting the disease be healed at its deepest level.
Oh, that's so awesome. Wow. Tobin Blake, The Healing of Jordan Young, a 21st Century Spiritual Guide to Health and Healing. And you can get this anywhere books are sold, but Tobin specifically before the show requested that people go to their local bookstore and support that industry, because it is, we need those local bookstores.
Yes,
you're
going to
miss them
yes.
when they're gone.
Yeah, and they're really struggling, folks, so.
And before we wrap up, Tobin, thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for sharing your presence. I could just feel it, and I know my day is going to be so much more pleasant now. Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap up the show?
Well, I said that the book was really, you know, about awakening, and that is absolutely true. But, you know, ultimately the driving message of the book is hope. And so often patients and anybody who's lived for any length of time in this world has struggled with, you know, physical disease, has struggled with relationship problems, right? People, human beings cause us the most problems of all, it seems like sometimes, has struggled with.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. This has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. You can check out the last 2 minutes of that interview if you would like to at youtube.com/spiritualshow. Sorry that we've run out of time. Coming up in just a moment here on CITR is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Horrific. So stick around for that. And I want to send you lots of love for a wonderful week. Be well.
Namaste.
Namaste.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.